Welcome to the Spartan Underground Show, your ultimate resource for everything Spartan race training. Discover what the best SGX coaches are doing to help their clients boost performance, dominate obstacles, and get through each race burpee free. Here is your host, Mike Diebler.
What's up, everybody? This is SGX coach Mike Diebler, and welcome to episode 9 of the Spartan Underground SGX show. If you have any questions or comments or just want to reach out to me, feel free to email me at info@spartanunderground.com. Can't believe we're already through 9 episodes. I hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. We'd love it if you'd give us a rating in iTunes or wherever you might be listening to this show. That would really help us out and help spread the word to anybody who's trying to improve their performance or maybe just run their first Spartan race. I may or may not have mentioned this before on the show, but my wife and I are actually trying to run a Spartan race in every U.S. state. So we have a long way to go. In fact, there's not even a Spartan race in every state, but we figured we'd worry about that when we got through all the states they currently have. But we're trying to make it a goal that we want as many people to join us as possible. So if you are going to be where we're running a race, we would love to have you join us. If you're not running with a team already, you can look up and see if there's a Spartan Underground team for the race you might be doing. And if so, we'd love for you to join us. And if not, feel free to create one and help us spread the word that way. But this month, we are going to be running the Spartan Sprint in Dallas on October 30th. And we'll also be in Boston November 11th for the Fenway Park Stadium Run. So if you're going to be in any of those cities, we'd love for you to join us, join our team. Or if you just want to meet up, feel free to email me and we can set something up, run together, or meet up before or after the race. All right, getting into this week's show, we have an awesome lineup for you today. We're going to go over some great research. Again, we're focusing a little bit on recovery. We're going to talk about contrast therapy and how that may help speed up your recovery after a tough workout. Our resource of the week is going to be a really cool running app to help improve your running efficiency. We have our Spartan dietitian, SGX coach Anne LaRue, back with another awesome nutritional tip for you. She's going to go over all about fat and actually helping you read nutrition labels specifically targeted towards looking at fat content. And then our SGX interview, we have SGX coach Joseph Bautista. He's up in near San Francisco. He's with NorCal Grit, puts on an awesome outdoor Spartan style obstacle course workout, and we talk about a ton of different things. This was a great interview, but we really focused on overtraining, some signs of it, how you can avoid it, and really how you can simplify your endurance training or your running training, and how people tend to overcomplicate this, which actually leads to overtraining, leads to injuries. So he gives you some great practical tips to help reduce your injury and improve your running performance. All right, well, I hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. All right, for this week's research review, we're going to continue a theme that we've been working on the last couple weeks, and that is on recovery. So this week, we're going to focus on contrast therapy for hopefully speeding up recovery. So the idea here is we are going to use both hot water immersion and cold water immersion to help improve the recovery process. So the theory is this. So obviously, when you get in more warm water, and this is usually, you know, around 100 degrees Fahrenheit or so, or 38 degrees Celsius, and what you're trying to do is the warmth actually expands blood vessels to actually improve blood flow. Then you're actually going to alternate that with cold water immersion, so you get in an ice bath around 15 degrees Celsius or 60 degrees Fahrenheit, something around there. And this is actually going to constrict blood vessels and actually help push blood out closer to the heart. So a lot of the issues with recovery is if you do a hard workout session and then don't do anything, you just get in your car, drive home, go to work, whatever, and don't really do anything to help improve that blood flow, some of that blood gets stuck, like for example, in your legs, and it has a hard time getting pumped out back to your heart so you can get rid of waste products and bring more oxygen to those muscles to help improve recovery. So this alternating hot cold is a way to expand, contract to help improve that blood flow and get oxygen to where it needs to go to the muscle, and almost more importantly, to get lactate and other metabolic waste products out of the muscles into the blood and then to the heart, to the lungs, or wherever it needs to go. So that's what this study looked at. Now, this is from 2012, the International Journal of Sports Physiology and Performance, and the title was Effects of Contrast Therapy Duration on Recovery of Running Performance. So for this study, they took a group of people and they all did the same trials. So they ran 3,000 meters and they timed that run to see what their performance was like. And then they did an interval workout where they did 8x400 meter sprints. And then they did one of four different types of recovery methods. One was nothing. That was the control group where they just did their intervals, then they just rested, and 2 hours later, they ran the 3,000 meter sprint again. Then they did it 6 minutes of contrast therapy, and here they alternated 1 minute hot with 1 minute cold. The hot was around 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The cold was around 59 degrees Fahrenheit, and they alternated for 6 minutes for that. And then they did the test again, same thing, but then they did for 12 minutes and then they did for 18 minutes. And then after all of those, they waited 2 hours and they ran that 3,000 meter run again, and they wanted to see what was the effect on performance. And they found with all contrast therapy methods, they all saw a decrease in soreness significantly after and were before they ran the next 3,000 meter run. But only the 6 minute therapy actually decreased the fatigue that set in. So they actually saw everybody ran worse, in other words, 2 hours later compared to the first 3,000 meter. But the group that did the 6 minute therapy actually saw the least amount of decrease. They only were 11 seconds slower, where the other group were at least 15 seconds slower. So it may not seem like a big deal, but again, if you are, if 11 seconds, 15 seconds, that's a big deal for you, then that might be something that would be significant. So basically what it showed was this short contrast therapy was better for decreasing the effects of a prior workout effort. So this really is only going to be significant for you if you're doing like multiple workouts in a day and you want maximal performance, where maybe you're going to do a race in the morning and then a race in the afternoon, or a workout session in the morning, one in the afternoon, and you want maximal performance in both of them. Contrast therapy might be effective. In this case, it showed that it was more effective than doing nothing, at least. So that might be beneficial for you. Now, that may or may not be realistic for you. You might not be able to set up hot baths and cold baths, so we have to remember that as well. But there is growing evidence that shows contrast therapy might be an effective tool for recovery, and you know, if it's practical or not, that's going to be up to you if you're going to be able to try this. But if nothing else, the point here is that you should be doing something to focus on recovery. Now, ideally, you're just making sure you have enough rest in between each workout session, but I'm realistic, and I know that some people want to work out back-to-back days or not take too many days off between workout sessions. So if you want to maximize your performance and work out more often, you better be doing something to focus on your recovery. And just resting and doing nothing, if it's not enough time, that's not going to be enough. So we're going to have to find these different methods for increasing your or improving your recovery time. So for example, if off topic a little bit, we're not talking about contrast therapy here, but just low intensity work after high intensity exercise session helps improve some of this lactate clearing and other metabolic waste products and byproducts to help clear them out so you do recover faster. So you could go on a hard interval run or do a hard workout session, and then you do a nice easy walk for 5 or 10 or even 20 minutes to help keep that blood flowing to clear some of those waste products that will reduce soreness and increase recovery. Now, sometimes that's not realistic, because maybe you just ran for 15 miles and you ran as hard as you could, and the last thing you want to do is move around for 10 or 20 minutes. So that's where something like contrast therapy might come in handy. Now, most of the studies show it's going to be a longer time if you're not necessarily doing a back-to-back workout session in a day, but I'm trying to speed up recovery in between sessions. So you might see something like 20 minutes or so, even up to 30 minutes of contrast therapy. Now, to keep this practical, what you can try and do is you can set up at home, fill up your bathtub with ice, get the water temperature pretty cold. So we're looking for somewhere around 60 degrees, although you can ease into it if that's too cold for you to start with. You can start a little bit warmer, but we do need significantly cold water. And then we need hot water as well. Now, you might have two baths that you can fill up with different temperatures and run across the house back and forth. But again, that might not be too practical. So try something like this. Hopefully you have a bathtub and a shower in the same bathroom. If so, you're going to fill up your bathtub, throw some ice in there to get it nice and chilly for you. And then you're going to turn on the shower and get it hot. So you're going to hop in a hot shower and stay in there for roughly a minute, 45 seconds to a minute, and then you're going to hop out and jump directly in your homemade ice bath, and you're going to hang out in there for about a minute, right? And you're going to go back and forth. Now, you might want to start out with just a couple rounds of that, so maybe four times through to help with that recovery, and then eventually you can get it longer and longer and increase it to maybe 10, 15, even 20 minutes. Now, you might not want to waste water by running the shower that entire time. So you might want to at home keep this a little bit shorter, turn off the water if you have to, it'll heat up again pretty quickly. All right, so that might be a simple way to start incorporating contrast therapy into your routine. So again, the main point is make sure you're doing something. If you want to work out hard and you want to work out hard more often, just taking it easy and doing nothing might not be enough. If you have a few days off, then that's probably fine, and you don't have to worry about adding too much other types of therapy. But if you want to do back-to-back days or two-a-days and get maximal performance so you are getting better and not just kind of struggling along through your workouts, try adding something like contrast therapy to see if that helps improve your recovery and give you better performance in your workouts and in your races. All right, for this week's resource of the week, I have another awesome app for you, and it's called Run Tempo. It's not a free app. I believe it's a 99-cent app, or at least a couple bucks, but it's definitely worth it to help improve your running tempo. And this is something that we've talked about before on the podcast. If you haven't listened to episode 2 with Coach Albert Liu and how he was focusing on the pose method, and one thing that we spent some time talking about was running cadence and how it's great for a lot of things, improving your efficiency, but maybe more importantly, reducing your risk of injury. So if you suffer from things like Achilles tendonitis or plantar fasciitis or patellofemoral pain, IT band syndrome, whatever it might be, not that this causes everything, but it's definitely something simple that you can do is focusing on your running cadence and trying to hit about 180 steps or so per minute, or 90 steps if you're only counting one foot. And that's what this app does. It just helps with your running cadence to let you know if you need to speed up your steps or slow down. Now you can get a simple metronome and then just set it for 180 beats or 90 beats, however you want to count your steps, and just make sure you're hitting the ground with each beat. Run Tempo just does a little bit more, and it's focused more for running, where a metronome is just going to be beeping in your headphones nonstop, which might get annoying after a while. So the Run Tempo app is just a little bit easier to follow and does a lot more. So definitely check it out. If not, at least keeping track of your cadence is important. So next time you're out for a run, just hopefully have a watch on you, set a timer, and see if you want to just count like your right foot steps. You should be hitting around 90 or so per minute. If you're way below that, you're dramatically increasing your ground impact, and that's just going to take its toll on your knees, your back, your ankles, your foot. So start tracking that running cadence and check out Run Tempo and see if that helps improve your efficiency and helps you feel better after a run.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Great to be back. This is Spartan SJX coach and registered dietitian Anne LaRue, here to teach you a little bit more about the foods that you're putting in your mouth. So today I figured that I would feed off of, no pun intended, feed off of one of the upcoming articles that I have for Spartan. So one of the things they wanted me to write about was Halloween candy and why we should try to avoid it instead of giving in to this temptation every year that really this is the first holiday that kind of sparks up that overeating and unnecessary overeating of food during October, November, December, into January, first week of January timeframe, when all these different holidays can really wreak havoc and put us off of our game. So I'm writing for them regarding Halloween candy, some of the top ones and the reasons why we want to avoid it. And one of those things that came up during that article writing was really the whole component about fat, healthy fats, and more specifically the unhealthy fats that come along with these candies. So keep an eye out for that blog, but I thought a great way to lead into it would be to talk about just that, about fats and how they pertain to our overall heart health and how you can help take a look at those on a food label and be able to tell the difference between healthy fats, unhealthy fats, and where to draw the limit. So I always find that it's most helpful for people if they actually understand why they're avoiding something or why they're wanting to add more of it into their diet. Because when I just tell people what to eat and what not to eat, that can be fine for the time being when they're gung-ho. But if they don't really understand why they're eating or avoiding eating something, then once the willpower or that determination is gone, it's easy to fall away from it because you didn't really understand why you were trying to make that modification. So let's talk a little bit about that. So our heart and our vascular system, obviously very important, right? Our heart, it keeps everything going. If our heart stops, we stop. It's the most important muscle that we have. We want to make sure that we're feeding it correctly. We often think about, you know, carbohydrates for energy and for fueling and protein for rebuilding muscles, but we also want to think about our overall heart health and the foods that we eat that can help contribute to its overall success and as a result, our overall success. And that can come down to the fats that we eat because the fats that we choose can either put us at risk for heart disease, which is the number one killer for men and women, or it can put us in a good spot. So let's break down fats on a food label. First and foremost, on a food label, you always want to make sure that you are looking at serving size. Why? Because everything that's listed there is only for the serving size indicated on the label. So if you're not looking at that when it's not a single serving item, then you may have your numbers all messed up, right? So let's talk a little bit about the different types of fats that you'll see for each serving size. The first line is going to indicate total fat. That is just telling you the total grams of fat per serving. It's not indicating for you whether those are healthy fats or unhealthy fats. That's just total fat. So that's going to be used as part of one of our equations, but by no means is it giving you anything really major to think about. The next line down does. The next line is saturated fat. So those are the fats that contribute to our overall poor heart health. Those typically come from meat sources and full-fat dairy sources. What they do, saturated fats cause our bad cholesterol to go up, and that can contribute to plaque buildup and an overall risk for heart health. So we want to try to limit those. So what I tell people when they're looking at saturated fats, I want you to go on that saturated fat line, go all the way to the right, and you're going to see a little percent. That's the percent daily value. If you're looking to have a food that's low in saturated fat, I want that percent to be as close to or less than 5% as you could possibly get it. Less than or equal to 10% is good, but less than or equal to 5% is great. Okay, so try to keep that number there. That's one way that when you're looking at a food and thinking that the fat is high, if you're less than or equal to 5% from the daily value, you can feel good that you have a low saturated fat food source, a low bad fat food source. But that's not the only part to this puzzle, right? Below that, you're going to see the word trans fats. Now, we have all heard that they're trying to take trans fats out of all foods. And why is that? Well, what they found was trans fats were not only doing the same thing as saturated fat, causing our bad cholesterol to go up, but they were causing our good cholesterol, our HDL, to go down. HDL is what helps take excess cholesterol back to the liver so that it can be removed from the body. So when our HDL number is down, our body is less efficient at removing more cholesterol. So that's kind of our helper cholesterol. So we don't want that number to go down, but that's what trans fats were doing, causing that to go down and our bad cholesterol numbers to go up. So they decided we should probably take this out of the food since we absolutely know it's affecting overall health. So most times you're going to see that number as zero, but here's something to keep in mind. If there is 0.5 or less grams of trans fats in a food serving, they don't have to list it. So for example, a serving size of Oreo cookies is 2. How many people eat 2 Oreos? I'm not really sure. I guarantee you I'm not one of them, so that's why that food rarely ever makes its way into my house, because I can't resist. So that's less than 0.5 grams for that serving. But what if you eat 4 servings? Well, guess what? That 0.4 grams per serving is now times 4. So you do have trans fats there. So keep that in mind. So trans fats we definitely want to avoid, but more often than not, they're going to say 0 on the label. So here's another piece that I want you to look at, because this ingredient in a food can help you identify the same negative heart effects that trans fats would be giving you. I want you to look at your ingredients, and if you see the word or words hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated, that's basically telling you the same thing as trans fat. So the next time you have one of your protein bars, take a look at it and see, okay, what percent of my saturated fats, but also in my ingredients, am I seeing the words hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated any type of oil? Because that's going to give me the same negative effects of heart health. Now on to the good stuff, the healthy fats, right? Normally on a food label, when we see really long words, we want to try to avoid those. Not in this case. Monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats, those are our healthy ones. What we want to do is we want to try to incorporate as many of those healthy unsaturated fats as we can when we have a high-fat food source. So how can you figure that out? Remember that total fat number that I said to you? What you want to do is make sure that a majority of the fats come from those healthy sources. So let's say, for example, you're looking at it and it says total fat, 8 grams. Saturated fat, 2 grams. That means 2 of those 8 come from saturated fats. Your trans fats will probably say 0. So that means there's 6 remaining fat grams. If 2 come from saturated and there's 8 total and there's no trans fats, that means the other 6 have to come from your mono and poly unsaturated fats. Sometimes those 2 are listed on the food label and it's easy to see, and other times they don't list them. But by process of elimination, the total minus the saturated, you can see, do a majority of my fats come from the healthy sources? If this is the case, you know that that food source is supplying you with overall healthy fats. So, kind of as a wrap up to all of that, there's 2 things you want to look for when you're looking at a food source to tell, do I feel good about this one when it comes to fat? So let's recap what those are. First of all, I want you to look at your saturated fat. Is it as close to or less than 5% as you can possibly get it? That's check number 1. Check number 2, do a majority of the total fat grams come from your heart healthy sources? If they do, that's 2 checks. We like that. Make sure that those 2 pieces are there. The type of food sources that you're probably not going to find that on, things like butter and different margarine spreads or full-fat dairy like cheeses, things like that where saturated fat is high and the good fats aren't enough. What can you do in that case? Well, the overall explanation there is just limit those foods. right? Those are foods that you should try to avoid or keep to a minimum as much as you possibly can anyways. There's not much you can do there. But otherwise, take into the consideration those two checks. Might be interesting the next time you go into the store and you pick up one of your protein or meal replacement bars. Yeah, we look at the protein, and yeah, we look for the sugar to be low. But next time, check on your saturated fats. If they're high, you may want to reconsider that bar. That's all for now. Check in next time. I plan to go over sugars. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, I have an awesome SGX interview today. I'm going to be interviewing Coach Joseph Bautista with NorCal Grit. He is actually a martial artist turned OCR athlete. He has a passion for helping people become better versions of themselves using mixed platforms, including fitness and OCR racing. He's actually a black belt, a competitive obstacle course racer, and specializes in multiple forms of mixed martial arts, sports conditioning, and strength enhancement. He likes to put an unconventional spin on functional fitness, and today he's going to talk to us about overtraining and simplifying your endurance training. So hope you guys enjoy the interview today. All right, so I am here with Coach Joseph Bautista. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Aru.
Aru, thank you so much for joining me. I know it's kind of late as we're recording this, but I know we're going to get into some good stuff, so it's going to be worth it for everyone. Let's get started, though. I gave you a little intro, but let's just start at the beginning. Kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and what drew you to Spartan Races.
Oh, man. Spartan Races really pulled me in through its sense of community. I come from a martial arts background. I'm a third-generation black belt, and what really drew me into Spartan Races from that was I needed a challenge, then I needed to define myself. And that's where I felt that I had an opportunity to define myself as an individual and not living underneath these shadows. I love what I've learned over through the years. My martial arts background has given me so much that it was a great opportunity to take that discipline over to Spartan Racing, but I'm able to define who I am through Spartan Racing. I just felt like a seamless transition.
Awesome, awesome. So how long have you been doing obstacle course races?
So I've been doing the obstacle course races since 2012. And my very first race, surprisingly, wasn't a Spartan race. For a year, I did two races outside of the Spartan series. And they definitely were not as challenging in a full complete unit. Whereas Spartan Race is asking that you run and you challenge not just your overall strength and endurance, but then there's also skill, your ability to think through an obstacle rather than just muscle through it.
Awesome. Awesome. So do you remember your first race pretty well, your first Spartan race pretty well?
Yeah, actually, my very first Spartan race was here in the San Francisco area at AT&T Park. I've lived in San Francisco almost all my life, and when I was able to walk through the door into the Spartan race, into the AT&T Park, and just see the entire stadium as my venue of the things I had to do, I was just, you know, I feel like a kid coming into San Francisco for the very first time when I did that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm actually going to be running my first stadium race at Fenway Park this November. And I've mentioned before on this show, I'm a Yankee fan, so I'm a little torn, but I'm also a big baseball fan. So it's just going to be a cool venue. I'm really excited about it. So what did you think of the stadium race?
Oh, man, I've done outdoor races and the stadium race. I think the biggest thing that it's also a good selling point. The biggest thing is that you don't have to get muddy, so you don't have to bring an extra change of clothes, even though these are called obstacle course races and you get muddy. But that was a big cool part about it. But the fact of the matter is seeing how Spartan Race was able to take a venue like a stadium and literally transform it into your obstacle course – everything was an obstacle. Anything is an obstacle. That was, it was like, you were like, your brain just exploded.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it seems like after talking to a few coaches that if you haven't run a race before, a stadium might be a great place to start. If you are a little intimidated and you're not ready to swim or get muddy or anything like that, it's a perfect place to just start at least.
Yeah, it definitely can. It's a great way to, you know, pun intended, get your feet wet. Mm-hmm. Without getting your feet wet.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I have to ask, how many burpees did you do in your first race?
Oh, man, I think I lost count after 90. Didn't land anything I wanted to. Didn't hit the spear throw. Mm-hmm. Didn't get the rope climb.
So a couple burpees. So,
yeah, we'll say a couple.
Okay, yeah. So how about leading into it? So you'd already done a couple races. Did you prepare differently for the Spartan race? Did you kind of just head in there and were like, let's just see what it's like and not prepare?
You know, after the first year of racing, I was like, okay, I need to start training. And the Spartan race, one of the things that really kind of hurt me was, since Spartan race doesn't give you the actual obstacles until – roughly, I mean, unless you're paying attention to any of the local pages and somebody leaks a map, you don't know what the obstacles are. And so what I ended up doing was honestly overtraining. I thought, okay, I need to prepare for this. I need to work harder. I need to, it's a 5-mile course. I need to make sure I run 10 miles. It's a rope climb. I need to make sure I climb the rope 20 times. And I overtrained.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that's pretty common, because especially when we hear words like grit, and that is a common word we hear in the Spartan world. What are your thoughts on overtraining? I mean, I think it's, people don't actually realize that they're overtrained sometimes because they're pushing themselves so hard.
Yeah. Cause a lot of them are so ingrained with the no pain, no gain. And it misconstrues what the definition of grit really is. I mean, grit is defined as passion and perseverance. It's not just a grind. Grit is not grind. There's a significant difference between the two. And when that's abused, then you break away from the simple equation of what training is, and it's work and rest. And that's what gets missed in overtraining, is that rest concept. You know, people say that they go for a run because it gives them relaxation, but they're still putting stress on the body. Mm-hmm. Rather than actually resting, you know, getting massage, simple things like massage therapy, or even just sitting down on the couch and watching a TV show on a day when you feel like you should be working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not paying attention to the nagging injuries or things that are there.
So in your experience, working with clients, you know, whether it's Spartan racing or just anything, do you typically see some signs that people are in an overtraining state?
It happens. It happens a lot quicker, and the signs are actually there a lot more broad, a lot more brazen than people give it credit for. You know, such as some people are doing cycling to compensate for their running, and they got a pain in their back, or they touch their ankle from running on trail for like 2-3 miles, and it's a little tender to the touch. Shoulder pain from, you know, pulling and lifting too many even light weights, and it's a small thing, but it still is a sign of overtraining, because even if you go to the doctors and you say, hey, something's wrong with me, they do a blood test or they do an MRI or they do an X-ray and they see nothing, because the signs are still within normal ranges, but they're starting to really present themselves that there's something going on with overtraining.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, there's that fine line between pushing yourself to maximal performance and then, you know, where you're on the edge but still okay, and then all of a sudden things are going downhill now.
Well, yeah.
So I'm a big proponent of rest too, and recovery, and just making sure – I think people just forget to include that in their program, right? They think about sets, reps, weight, but rest is left out, right?
Very much. And it really comes down to what's been coined as the frog in the pot theory. And what that frog in the pot theory is essentially that frog A was put into a, you know, a pot. And what the scientific theory on that was that they would gradually increase the heat within tolerable limits. And what they found is that the frog would just withstand the heat of it, you know, and tolerate it because it wasn't drastic enough until eventually frog A died. Then frog B was put into the pot and it was turned on, you know, the heat was turned on quite fast and frog B just got the heck out of the pot. But we're not fully aware and feeling these strong, you know, again, brazen injuries, things, because they're happening small and minute. And we think, okay, it's nothing. I'll just push through it. So we ignore it until it becomes something worse.
Yeah, yeah. That makes perfect sense. And I think people listening probably have experience with kind of both of these situations, both frogs, if you will, where, yeah. You know, frog B, they've never done anything or it's been a super long time. Maybe they played sports in high school. 20, 30 years later, they want to try a race and they just go to a playground and start playing on the monkey bars and hurt their shoulder, or they just do like a super hardcore workout and hurt everything. And that's kind of like that overhaul right away. Or yeah. We have those people who, you know, they're working out and they're pushing and they're pushing and they're pushing and not realizing all the damage that they're doing there.
Yeah. And yeah, that component of rest you're talking about, you know, most people are, when especially a beginner jumping in, they're underpowered in their aerobic system. That makes the recovery from what may not be a hard session to another person, but it's hard for them, more difficult. And they're not aware of that. If you're first starting out, you definitely have to give it kind of a 1x5 rule. If you work out really hard on one day, you got to give it at least a multiplier of 5, not 5 days, but of 5 equivalent. So for instance, instead of one day of, you know, going right back at it, you can scale down the next 5 days and build right up into it until it becomes a 2x4. And then eventually you can hit your 6 days of training and one day of rest.
Awesome. I think that's a perfect rule to start with. Yeah. And the idea of rest isn't always do nothing. And I think some people, when we say rest and recovery, they think, all right, well, I'll just sit and do nothing today. But
Yeah. And there's tons of different facets of resting. I mean, running, a lot of people think of it as a relaxation. Relaxation doesn't always mean rest, because if you can clear your mind when you run, that's great. But then again, that's stress on the body. You want certain things like yoga, and please don't judge me on this one. A bar class is really good for recovery. If you've never done bar, give it a try. Your butt's going to be hurt in places you didn't know existed. But, you know, bar classes, and then even some of the light aquatic classes. I mean, aquatic training is even another avenue, because there's very little to no – there's actually no impact on the body, and your body is freely moving in the water. But aquatic classes are really great for recovery.
Awesome. And just incorporating some cross training in there where it's not all about running. It's not all about hiking. It's not all about obstacles and strength, and there's some other things that we can definitely throw in there.
Yeah.
All right. So you gave a couple of really simple things we can start with. So like the 1x5 rule, just making sure we have some cross training and rest in there. Any other tips that you would give somebody just to make sure they're not hitting where, you know, they still want to work out, they want to push themselves, but they don't want to overtrain and hurt themselves or decrease performance. Any other tips you would throw out there?
Yeah. You know, listening to your body, and I know that people jump into these things and some of them feel very confident that they understand and listen to their body. But when you listen to your body, listen to your body on how it responds with certain signs. For instance, you could use some symptoms of like first stage overtraining. You'll notice that you'll have increased vulnerability in your back, knee, ankle, and foot. You just want to kind of like do a self-check on those. You know, how's my back doing? Is it feel like it's overstraining? How's my knee? Does it feel a little tweaky and on the side or underneath the kneecap? How's my ankle? Am I feeling like I'm rolling it a little more? Or do my toes feel a little tender? For instance, in foot injuries, do I feel a lot of impact from, you know, my feet on like plantar fasciitis? That's a huge one we see a lot of signs on. Hormone levels. And now this will get a little bit weird. If I have any lady Spartans out there listening here, you know, just pay, you know, keep track of some of your some of those lady times. And if it's not on your regular time, that could be a big sign of stage one being changing that output. And then and this one's going to be a little bit out there on that one. Maybe a reduced sexual desire. If you're feeling like you're not interested, that can be a big stage on that one as well. Also, you know, mental stress. You know, if you're at work every day and you're feeling that things that you normally can do are just becoming a little bit more challenging, that's a big sign that you're in that first stage. And this is just that first stage. You're noticing some things are just bothering you a little more, or you're feeling a little anxious, and it's not for the race. It's just, oh man, I got to do this. Oh man, I got to do that. You're catching yourself breathing a little bit more shallower. You know, those are things that'll be, you know, jumping right out if you want to do a self-check on those items.
Awesome. Yeah. And you know, when you say hormone levels, people might think, well, I'm not going to go to the doctor all the time and get it checked. But like you said, there's some simple things that you can just listen to your body. And if you stop menstruating, I mean, that's a common thing what you see with like elite athletes, like gymnasts, where they just, they stop until they're done competing. And that's, you know, can be damaging on the body. And
Easy,
men, low libido, and definitely these are all signs that something's a little bit off. And, you know, it could be the workout, it could be something unrelated, but it's always just a good idea to pay attention to your body there.
Very much.
Awesome. So let's get into some trainings. I know we want to talk about endurance training a little bit, because obviously with a Spartan race, that needs to be a big component of our training program. So people tend to overcomplicate things when they're doing endurance training. What are your thoughts on that, and how can we make it a little bit more simple?
Man, that overcomplicating it. I think the first overcomplication has to do with distance. And we normally see, you know, these distances. I mean, there's three main categories that everybody is doing. I mean, you're trying to get your trifecta. You basically got to hit almost what? You got to hit about 26, 28 miles total to complete a trifecta. You have your 5 for your sprint. You have your 11 for your super, and then your 14 plus for your beast. Simplify it. You want to complete the distance equal to your race logged as in a week. So for instance, if your goal is a sprint, you want to log in 5 miles each week minimum, or 6. You want to have your range close to that. If you're doing a super, you want to log in 11 to 12. If you're doing a beast, you want to log in your 14, your plus, but you want to have it as an equivalent at the end of the week instead of trying to log them all in a single run. And that simplification helps your body simplify recovery.
Awesome. And I'm going to repeat that just because I think that's such a strong point that, okay, if I'm running a beast, I don't need to be running 13 miles at a time. And what you're saying is I can break that up into, I mean, do you have like a recommendation, 2, 3? Is it, it just depends on the person kind of thing?
Well, you know, I think you still have to give variable. So 1 week you do a 3, 4, 3, 2. The next week you can do all threes.
Okay.
You know, the beautiful thing about that, about having the mileage equal at the end of the week towards what your race is it doesn't have to be consistent except for the mileage at the end of the week.
Awesome.
And what's beautiful about that is you teach your body how to recover in those small increments. I did the Tahoe World Championships, man, and I'm not going to lie to you. Every 3 to 4 miles, my body got another win. And versus if you do these long runs, these sixers, these eighters, your body doesn't know to recover soon. It's waiting to recover after 6 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And if it's something where, like, you know what, I do want to see if I can go those longer distances, then so what you're saying basically is I'm not going to run as much that week. So I might get one long run in. And
yeah,
now I'm going to recover.
Exactly. And, you know, that's definitely something you want to save for. Let's say if you're brave enough to do a 4 or 12 hour hurricane, or if you're literally your goal set is that belt buckle, that ultra beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I that's something that I talk about a lot with my clients when they see those numbers and they're like, I don't know if I can, you know, run 13 miles every week. And it's like, don't. I never would tell you to do that, you know. Maybe once at just, and not even 13, but we'll do one long one just to see how you hold up. And it doesn't have to be hard, you know, it could be walking too. It's
exactly,
it's just getting a little bit of time on your feet in there, basically.
Yeah.
So distance. Anything else that you think? What about intensity? In terms of overcomplicating.
You know, and you don't have to always have high intensity. I mean, these are endurance races. I mean, unless you're in the elite wave or if you are in the competitive, but at that point, you should be working with a coach. You should be working with individual trainers to help you reach your peaks on those components. But if you're just, your weekend warrior, your average Joe and Jane, and you want to conquer the course by going from start to finish, you know, your pace just has to be, as long as you can hold a conversation, the more you can get your miles in at holding a conversation, the better equipped you are to be able to have a regular day the next day and live your life.
Yeah. Not take a week off after a Spartan race.
Oh, I've done that before. You finish your first beast. You're just like, don't call me, don't text me, don't talk to me. I hate the world.
I know that feeling exactly. Yep. Awesome. Any other tips on simplifying their cardio or endurance program?
You know, definitely log everything in. You know, it doesn't have to be a super cool spreadsheet straight out from Excel. As long as you have a notebook, you write the date, you write your miles. And I know one of the things I also like to recommend when you run, and this comes from the basic concept of what they say in marathon running, which is the first half of the race is ran with your body, and then the second half is with your mind. If you write down how you felt, what you were thinking, it definitely will change what happens in your runs all the time. So just, I mean, write it down, get a simple notebook, go to the dollar store and write down the date, write down your miles, and then write down how you felt. Maybe even write down how long it took you to complete those miles.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. And if they're logging anything else, they can kind of see some trends maybe where it's like, you know, maybe they're doing a food log or something and it's like, I felt awesome on this day, and you know what? I ate a lot of good, nutritious food that day, and I slept really well, and it's like, all right, well, this is making sense. If I do those things, my runs are better, and I feel better afterwards.
Yeah, and logging it in will also give them an opportunity to be able to do that self-check and see and be aware of any of those early onset signs of overtraining, you know, reaching back to those hormone levels, you know, any of those nagging injuries that start or something that just started presenting itself.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Kind of going back to overtraining a little bit, but still on the topic of what we're talking about, do you work in like deload weeks or recovery weeks or anything like that with your clients just to kind of make sure they're in check and not killing themselves? Anything like that you'll throw in?
Yeah, it's more of a peak and valley. I'll peak my clients up. So, and then I'll valley them down as a taper method, almost as a UFC or an MMA fighter would do on our 6-week camp. They would ramp up the first 3 to 4 weeks and then bring it back down on the next 5 and 6 weeks towards race day as their body is recovering in. So yeah, load, first it's a technique skill on the first 2 weeks, then it's technique skill with those loads and increased intensity, and then pull the intensity back as we taper down through it. But definitely logging everything in again. You know, you don't want to have to lift. You don't want to be lifting more on your heavier days because you want to increase the intensity and the duration, not just the load. You want to pick those loads up in the first two couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Kind of going off of that, what would like I know this is a really broad and general question, but what would a typical training week look like if somebody was working with you or if somebody came to you wanting some advice? And, you know, let's just say they were generally a fit person and they just want to know what kinds of stuff would I do in a typical week to help me train for Spartan?
You know, I add all components necessary from sprints and like Tabata sprints, but in scaled phases. Mm-hmm. Endurance long runs, you logged in at pace. Most of the time they're doing some of those on their own and I'm coaching them through their OCR sessions.
Okay.
A lot of the times I'd love it if I can get them, and this is schedule permitting, if I can get them to run before we do our specific OCR trainings.
Gotcha.
create multiple environments for them that they're not expecting. You know, I don't like to tell a lot of my clients what they're doing on their OCR training days, because I don't want them to have the expectation and then that them not develop into that expectation. They need to work on the fly. Gotcha. And then reactive training. Reactive training is a huge one that needs to be done, especially as a high component, because when you're running, I don't know if you've ever done the Tahoe World Championships in Squaw Valley, or even majority of the outdoor locations, or even a location such as Hawaii. In Hawaii, there was a significant amount of mud. It was the entire course, and so you were spending the entire course adjusting your footing every time you're stepping down, because you don't know if there's a rock there, or if that's just slippery mud, or if it's dense mud, or if there's a stick branch hanging out. You have to adjust your footing all the time. So that reactive training is extremely high component. I don't push my clients through conventional training. I like to do a lot of unconventional methods because I want them to react and develop technique of reaction.
Awesome. So when you say reaction training, just so everybody listening knows, what are some specific examples, like agility training, or what would you do with somebody?
Honestly, agility training is not my form of reaction. I'll use boxing, kickboxing, constantly move the targets. I'll do have them do running, not full agility like suicide sprints. I'll have them run, and when they turn around, I'll change where the location of the target is. Gotcha. So, for instance, I'll have a cone near me, and I'll say, okay, run to that car and back. And then when they run back, I said, okay, now run to that car and to the tree behind me.
Awesome.
And what that does for them is they have to think on the fly versus get complacent on, okay, I know I have to go to there and back to here.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Cool. And what would be in, other than that, in a typical OCR training workout with you, if I were to come in there, what – so I know you want it to be unexpected, but what
That's
types
okay.
of
no.
stuff would be?
Well, I still keep the basics that we have in our Spartan race. NorCal Grit is my training session that I have every Saturday up here in Northern California. It's in Pleasanton. And we do a two-hour training every Saturday. What we do on the first 30 to 45 minutes is we tackle the main targeted obstacles that everybody has the highest hyper-focus on. So there is some things that are regular that you can expect, which is the spear throw. We break down the spear throw. We go through different lengths, and we help you develop the target on that firing. Next is the wall. We break down how to get over the wall from a 4 foot to a 7, and then we drill that out. And then followed by the rope climb. I teach all concepts of getting up the rope as well as how to come down off the rope. Now everybody is learning it's highly hyper focused on getting up the rope. But the hardest part is not getting up.
Yeah.
It's getting down. And if you've ever done the rope climb and you're exhausted and you made it up that rope and you came straight down really fast, you look at your fingers and it's carne asada.
Oh yeah. Yep. Okay, so that's like the first part of the workout. What can you expect after that, after your specific obstacles?
The next thing you can expect is a quick, small rest, because everybody loves their water break. and then immediately following that, it's the course layout, where I give them the entire course laid out, which we've already drilled aside from just the spear throw wall climb. They've already done the run in their warm up. They've already done 3 of the 5 obstacles in their prime, which I use to prep their bodies, and then we have their specific obstacles that we train for and focus on.
Nice, awesome.
But we basically run a mini course every training session.
Sweet, awesome, and that's just fun, which is always an underlooked part of a training program, to make it fun and not just let me pick up some weights and put them back down.
Definitely, yeah. And you know, if we have a big number of group on that day, and me and my assistant coach Paul Rubio feel up for it, we might give away some prizes, maybe some Fit Aid, a big old 2 gallon tub of protein.
Nice.
Depends on how nice we feel that day.
Or just a handshake or high five or something.
Yeah, one of those attaboys, a pat on the back.
Well, awesome. Cool. I know we're running out of time. We could talk for a while, and we're probably going to have you come back on here. We're going to cover some other topics with you. But just a couple rapid-fire questions to finish up. What is your favorite obstacle?
My favorite obstacle is the Bucket Brigade. I know everybody hates it. I love it.
Yeah, you're just weird. Nah. So why would you say that's your favorite?
Yeah, well, being in the martial arts for many years, my favorite finish in MMA is the rear naked choke. And every time I grab that bucket, I feel like I'm going to choke it out.
That's probably a good image. As you're walking with it.
How about least favorite then? All right, my least favorite, and this is only because I was introduced to it this last weekend at the World Championships, and that's the ape hanger, and it was two rungs away from hitting the bell, and I fell down.
Oh, that's a killer. Yeah, that's a tough one. I got to do that one in Palmerton earlier this year, and that was kind of a surprise. But that is a challenge one. If you're not good on monkey bars and you're not good climbing rope, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, you're in for a rude awakening. And the water up there was really cold.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. And the bad part is, even if you ring that bell, you're hitting the water.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. How about, do you have like a cool resource that we can share with our listeners? A book, a piece of equipment, an app, just anything you think everyone should be using?
I think the biggest thing is running, and one of the best apps that I found, and I know you're gonna laugh at me, it's actually a running app that you're chased by zombies.
Nice.
it's quite entertaining. It's not too expensive. You pay for it for the year, and it literally gives you a storyline dialogue that helps you through your running. And as you're running, you're picking up tools that you can use for your town to rebuild your town. And you're basically called runner number 5, and it's called Run Zombies. If you get it, it's going to help you out with your running because it helps you get lost in your running. And you're also completing a secondary task while you're doing your runs. So you're literally playing a game while you're running.
That's awesome. I've never heard of that. And I might have to download that one.
You're in for it. I used it on a half marathon, and it literally said and I literally heard in the background noise a zombie coming up near me, and I just got lost in the entire app, and I was listening to the zombie coming at me, and I turned to my right, and I see a person gaining speed up on me, and I panicked, and I ran faster.
That's awesome. All right, so everybody listening, you're going to have to check that out. I will put any links that we mention in the show notes. You can find them at spartanunderground.com/episode-8. Okay, final question. If you have somebody come up to you, they're training for their first race, what's one piece of advice you'd give them?
Just do it. Get your feet wet. You can only learn by doing. You cannot learn by practicing. You cannot learn by just mimicking. The only way you learn is by doing it. One of the things I tell a lot of people I work with is your fear and your faith are exactly the same. They only have power when you believe in them. So have faith in yourself and believe in yourself.
Awesome. Awesome. Great advice. All right. So if anybody is in the San Francisco area, I'm sure they're going to want to look you up for a training session. So how do people get a hold of you? They want to reach out, contact you, learn more about you.
Right now, you can find me doing NorCal Grit. That's my obstacle course race training at Elite Training Center in Dublin, Pleasanton. You can see us. You can check us out on the website of Elite Training CA. That is capital C, capital A, .com. You'll look under the obstacle course racing or OCR. That's where you'll find me. We just started a new group called the Little Gritters, our 6 to 11 racers. Guess what? You'll be seeing a lot of them at Spartan Races, so look out for them. But we're located in Pleasanton, California, just east of San Francisco. You can also find me on Facebook, first name Joseph, last name Bautista. You'll recognize me right now by a picture of me underneath a waterfall.
Awesome. Cool, and I'm excited about that Little Gritters program. I definitely want to get you back on here and see how that's going.
Thank you. It was great being on here.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. We'll talk again soon.
See you guys later. I'll catch you all on the course.
All right. Haru.
Haru.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 9 of the Spartan Underground SGX show. I want to thank you for listening in today. I hope you got one or two useful applications for your training program. And I wanted to thank our guest today, first coach Joseph Bautista, for sharing some of his insights in training, overtraining, and simplifying your endurance training program. If you're ever in the Northern California area, I highly recommend checking out one of his workouts with NorCal Grit. And I also wanted to thank SGX coach Pam LaRue for giving us some insight about fat and making sure we're checking the nutrition labels on the foods we eat, not just for calories, but also looking at that fat content. Well, that's it for today. Don't forget to check out the show notes at www.spartanunderground.com/episode-9 for any links or contact info. If you have more questions with any of our guests, you can reach them there. If you have any questions you want me to answer on the show, feel free to contact me at info@spartanunderground.com. And finally, we still have some free socks we're looking to give away. If you want some compression socks for your next race, we have some SGX Spartan Underground socks for you. These socks are free with purchasing our 90 Days to Spartan training program. You get all three programs with a purchase. You get the Sprint program, the Super program, and the Beast program. And we're going to ship you a free pair of our compression socks. All right, that's it for now. We'll have another great episode next week. Keep training hard.